Man, I am so excited to have my next guest on the show. You're going to love Dr. Darren Porcher. He's a criminal justice expert, witness, and consultant, and chances are you've seen him on the news giving his expert analysis. Dr. Porcher retired from the New York City Police Department as a lieutenant after 20 years of service. In his tenure as a member of the NYPD, Dr. Porcher performed a multitude of tasks, from training and recruiting new officers to being on the ground during the terrorist attacks on Manhattan in 2001, where he was responsible for the supervision and rescue and recovery of victims in the World Trade Center complex. You are going to love this interview. We talk a lot about different topics, some somber, but some that are going to make you laugh. Dr. Darren Porcher, next on the CJ Evolution Podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Thank you for tuning in. I know you got many options, but thank you for spending a little bit of your valuable time with me. Big shout out to all the first responders out there, whatever you were doing, fire, EMS, police. Thank you so much for continuing to serve in these difficult times. A big shout out to everybody else out there who is keeping the country going. Thank you so much for what you do. So excited to be partnered with an amazing company called Detectachem. Now, if you've never heard of them, you need to check them out because your department needs their valuable technology. This amazing technology of theirs fits in the palm of your hand, and it detects illicit drugs, explosives. This is must-have equipment for your officers. Head over to the website, cjevolution.com, see the link to Detectachem, and see how this company can help keep your troops safer. You know, folks, if you don't have a copy of my microbook, Evolve, you need to grab a copy. It is a collection of routines, habits, and advice to take charge of your life and be your best self. I wrote this book for you, the criminal justice professional, but it really applies to whoever out there. Everybody can benefit from this book. And best of all, if you reach out to me through social media, I will send it to you for free. Yes, you heard me right, for free. An autographed copy I will drop in the mail. Now, if you want an ebook version of Evolve, head over to the website, cjevolution.com, and pick up your ebook version. On to the show with the one and only Dr. Darren Porcher. Hello, everybody. Very excited to have my next guest. You've probably seen him on the news. Dr. Darren Porcher is all over the place, giving his expert analysis on Homeland Security, law enforcement matters. Dr. Porcher, thank you for being on the show, brother.
Thanks for having me. I've been waiting to get on for a while. Unfortunately, you brought me in. I'm good.
Well, I appreciate it, Darren. You've done so much, man. I was looking over your background, man. Dude, you've done so much for this great country. You were in the military. Thank you for your service. And, you know, you did 20 years in one of the biggest department in the country, and that's NYPD. And I can say that because I used to be a cop, and I always admired NYPD. And you were a lieutenant, brother. And what got you into service? What was the catalyst, man? You served your country, you served your community, and as a police officer. What was the catalyst behind, you know, getting into the service you did?
You know, it was the weirdest dynamic because I was on active duty for 4 years, and I came out at the time where we had Desert Shield back in 1990, and I got a job working at the United Nations. So I left from active duty going into a desk job in the United Nations. It just didn't work out, to say the least. So, you know, I was tied to a desk. I was taking crap from people that were beneath me. So I said, look, there's got to be another way to do this. So I signed up, I became a cop in the NYPD, and then it just kind of ran from there. It was a great fit for me because I think that the transition from military life to civilian life was very difficult for me. And the police department allowed me an avenue that ran consistent with my level of my values, so to speak.
Yeah, and it's a natural, I mean, because I'm the same. And I was in the Army too. I was down at Fort Bragg with the 82nd. And then,
oh, get out of here. Okay,
yeah, I was down, jumping out. I was jumping out of perfectly good airplanes, bro.
How many jumps on your 214, man?
You know, I had probably 120, 125. I don't know for sure. But I was in an airborne unit, brother. Man, that's all we did. We jumped all the time. But
you were in the 82nd, you said?
Yeah, I was down at Fort Bragg with the 82nd Charlie Company, second of the 505th. And
you guys in the 100, you guys in the 101st were my heroes, man.
Now you're my hero, brother. Thank you for your service. And then, to your point, I mean, I agree. I think it's a natural progression from, you know, the military, because it's that, you know, it's the military, and then, you know, law enforcement's paramilitary, you know, with rank, structure, chain of command. So for me, you know, I did the same thing you did. I mean, I just went into law enforcement. And I mean, you've done some, I mean, you were a lieutenant with NYPD. Now I got to ask you, brother, I always ask people from like big, huge, NYPD is the biggest department, municipal department in the world, correct?
It's the largest police department in the United States.
I thought it was the biggest in the world.
See, I'm not too sure about that, because when I think of a place like Beijing, China, we can possibly have a smaller department than what they have in Beijing. But, you know, they oftentimes minimize the statistics that they put out from China. So we look at either Shanghai or Beijing. Yeah. I'm not sure what the numbers are, but I know for a fact that from a national perspective of the United States, the NYPD is the largest.
Now, how is it working? And this might be a dumb question. I'm going to ask it anyway. How do you, I mean, you can't know everybody. I mean, there's thousands and tens of thousands of people. So how is it working for an agency so huge?
Well, you know what happens with a place like the NYPD? It's a very compartmentalized department. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you go to other places like, let's say, Miami-Dade County, et cetera, you know, you have that relationship with everyone on the job. You can ask someone, do they know someone? And they'll tell you, yeah, I know someone there. But what happens in the NYPD, the compartmentalization of patrol, narcotics, the detective bureau, and a semblance of other various specialized units, kind of section people off. And oftentimes you have people that just, they become somewhat complacent or content in the divisions or the unit that they work in, that mm-hmm. unless you're dealing with them on like a detail, like a parade detail, presidential visit, something to that effect, a lot of times you won't know those people. But believe it or not, it works. One of the dynamics that can somewhat be troublesome is the bureaucracy attached sure. to a department of 38,000 plus uniformed sworn officers. That oftentimes can be something that can, it can be a challenge to things that you want to do. Whereas when you have a much smaller department, you're able to act with far more autonomy to get things done.
Sure, sure. Now you were, I mean, you've done, like I said, you've done so much. You were at one, you instructed over 2,000 recruits during a 3-year period as a sergeant.
Right, in the academy.
In the academy, amazing. You were also on scene supervising rescue and recovery efforts for victims of the World Trade Center attack,
9/11, yes. God, dude.
And you're healthy and everything. I always hear about these first responders, brother, and you know what I'm talking about, that are getting sick. And, you know, we think we need to be doing more for them. But you're okay, you're fine, you're healthy, right?
Yeah, you know, it's unfortunate. I'm not going to stay on this point long, but yeah. At the time, the secretary, it was Christine Todd Whitman, sure. came out and stated that there were no hazardous particles in the air. We were safe, and yeah, nobody bullshit. Needs to worry. We took yeah. the ride, exactly. We believed her. We believed her. So, yeah. you know, we fell for the banana in the tailpipe as it relates to that. And then it's just unfortunate that we just have so many first responders that have died as a result of 9/11 sickness from being yeah. down there and inhaling those toxic fumes. I'm fortunate that I got out of that, but it was one of those things that I was like, man, you know, I know people that have passed away due to 9/11 sickness, you know, and it's an unfortunate circumstance attributed to working at that Ground Zero site.
Yeah. And on a lighter note, you know, the banana in the tailpipe reference for all you young people out there listening, that's from Eddie Murphy back in the day doing Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah.
Now, talk about Darren. You know, again, so much, man, that you've done. You received your doctorate degree from Fordham University. I haven't read your dissertation, but I love it's reducing school misdemeanor assaults in urban settings through collaboration between the schools. School leaders and police. I mean, obviously it's an important topic. Are we doing enough with assaults in our high schools?
Well, a lot of it, you know, a lot of what I wrote in my dissertation directly connects with a lot of what we see with these school shootings, mm-hmm. such as Parkland, Columbine, et cetera. And it's just having that connection between the school safety, school leaders, and the police, we oftentimes don't work in unison. And I'll be the first to tell you that I'm guilty of, on many occasions, walking on the scene and just completely taking charge. Look, we're the police. This is the way this thing is going to go. Everyone needs to fall in, right, lockstep in accordance. But as we progress, I found that we need more of a collaborative approach to the violence that we deal with in schools, because a lot of times you have these students that are bullied, and one of the first things that they think of is getting a gun and coming in and shooting up the place. So we need to have better intelligence to avail police and all of the practitioners that are on the ground conducting these assessments, so we can recognize and identify the early telltale signs, and we can put in the necessary fortifications moving forward. Like I said, I've been guilty of this on many occasions, but as we progress, I've seen more and more police departments. Traditionally, a lot of police departments have school resource officers. Those resource officers are working much closer with the educators to assess if there, in fact, is any warning signs that can precipitate a danger to the students and the population as well.
Yeah. And do you think we're recognizing and it's impossible, man. I mean, it really is, unless I'm missing something. I mean, I think there's obvious warning signs, but then you got these kids that come into to schools that it doesn't seem like there were any warning signs at all. You know what I mean? So it's almost like trying to predict the future, and it's crazy, man. It's getting out of control.
Yeah, well, one of the things we as law enforcement have to rely on heavily with a student population, it's a two-pronged approach. The grapevine. When I say the grapevine, what is the word on the streets in connection with these kids? All right, was there a gang assault? Was somebody humiliated? What is moving forward in terms of what the grapevine is with that student population? Who's saying what and how? The second component is staying abreast of social media. When I say social media, it's not just as simple as having an understanding of how to work Facebook and Instagram. Yeah. There's just so many of these sites that come up on a day-to-day. These kids are using an app a week. And so we need to stay abreast of what is currently being utilized by that student population and ensure that we can elicit intelligence so we can stay in front of these things from a proactive perspective as opposed to reactive. So in synopsis, it's the grapevine and technological innovations that assist us as law enforcement in protecting that student population as a whole.
Yeah, and it's a great point you mentioned, Darren, because I know when I was on the job, I mean, we had problems within the high school and, you know, critical incidents. I mean, you're exactly right. At the first, you know, we're proactive in looking at those social media accounts, and there's so many of them, man. I mean, there's just not a handful of them. There's a ton of them, but you're exactly right. These teenagers are putting everything on social media, you know, whether or not they're suicidal, whether or not they want to go harm somebody, they're putting all that shit on social media. So you're exactly right. It's a multifaceted approach.
Yeah, a lot of students, you know, programming is becoming very big with students, and you even have students that are creating their own apps to communicate. So it's one of those things that we just really need to use both of those components, the grapevine and knowing that, hey, look, you know what? There's a potential threat involving this particular student based on this particular incident. And this is how this student communicates. So oftentimes you may not know what the social media avenue is, but the students will avail you what that information is so you can properly attach to it accordingly.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's shift gears a little bit, Darren. I mean, you were a police officer for 20 years, seen a lot of shit. You probably keep in touch with a lot of police officers that are still on the job, I would imagine. I still do. What do you think some of the challenges, and this is probably a broad question, I'm going to ask it anyway because there's so many of them out there. What do you think some of the biggest challenges facing law enforcement going into the future are going to be?
Well, there's a multitude of different challenges that law enforcement is facing. One of the major challenges that law enforcement is coming across is decriminalization or criminal justice reform. Mm-hmm. Because what I'm finding is many departments, departments are run by an executive such as a mayor or an elected official. That elected official, in many instances, doesn't have a solid background in policing or law enforcement. They're reacting based on the electorate. So oftentimes the electorate will drive criminal justice reform and the elected official will say, look, I need to get something out there right away without doing a proper assessment. And I give you an example. Here in New York State, we're going through something referred to as bail reform. Yeah. With this bail reform, we're seeing a lot of people that shouldn't be released that are being reintroduced to the general public and they're committing crimes. We just had a situation here a couple of weeks ago recently. We had an undocumented alien that the governor and the mayor refused to turn over this information to ICE. So as a result, this person was arrested. ICE was never notified of the detainment of this individual. But as a result of bail reform, this person was let out of jail and went back out and continued to offend, subsequently sexually assaulting and killing a 92-year-old woman. And so it begs the question of, is criminal justice reform sound? And I believe it can be if it's done tactful. We need to have the proper stakeholders at the table to ensure that a qualitative process goes about. In addition to that, we gotta make smart choices in terms of how we're letting these people out. But the cop is the one that's dealing with a lot of this with a lot of this stuff on the ground and pound. It's that granular level, that police officer that's dealing with citizens on a day-to-day encounter basis. That cop that gets out of the radio car that engages the two individuals that are involved in whether it's a domestic dispute or it's a lost child. He or she is responsible in many cases in how this thing is directed. So when we look at what the challenges for law enforcement are at this stage, I go back to criminal justice reform. And in addition to that, the revolving door of elected officials that come in that don't have a sustained policy. We have a policy we move with for 2 years, 3 years, and then we have someone else that comes in and they regress and they go in a different direction. And it seems like the major pylon is coming in connection with the rhetoric against police. This anti-police rhetoric is really making it difficult for our brothers in blue to merely just go out there and do their jobs and protect the public that they were directed to protect as a result.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And I saw something in New York, and I think this was a different one, Darren, where there was a guy who was actually mocking the bail reform, that he had been arrested. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. It was all over the news about a week ago where he was actually mocking the bail reform, and he was thanking politicians because he's been arrested like 200 fucking times.
Yes.
And then it was a revolving door, and then he's right back on the street, and this guy's got airtime, and he's making fun of the bail reform. One of these politicians gonna listen. I mean, I don't understand how the citizens of New York put up with this crap. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, if the cops can't do their job, if their hands are tied and it's a revolving door, what's New York going to be like in a few short years? You know what I mean?
New York is on the heels of San Francisco and Los Angeles.
God help us.
When we look at these, tell me about it. When we look at these progressive lawmakers and elected officials, such as Mayor de Blasio is one, these are individuals that are purely out of touch. Oftentimes, they're doing things with the expectation of appeasing the electorate. But it's getting to a point. We're reaching a breaking point here because decriminalization or criminal justice reform is really taking us backwards. And as a result, we see the quality of life is diminishing at a record pace in New York City. And you walk like in a place like Los Angeles, they have an area, Skid Row. Literally speaking, that's what it is, a Skid Row. It's an abomination of homeless people, and nothing is really being done to to maintain that society. And oftentimes, the police officer is that individual that steps in because there are no other agencies that are stepping forth mm-hmm. to the table to assist in this quality of life challenge that these major cities like New York, Los Angeles, and San Francisco are dealing with. So there's no real contingency plan for dealing with this regression from these progressive lawmakers yep. as a result.
Yeah, great cities that you mentioned are plunging into chaos because some idiots that want votes. And I saw, you know, somewhere on the West, I don't know if it was LA or San Francisco, Darren, where they want to get rid of, you know, the use of force. Granby Connor, they want to throw that out the window. There's actually legislation that I read that they want to disarm cops. And I think one of the problems that law enforcement faces, you tell me if I'm wrong, you're an expert, Darren, people aren't flocking to be cops anymore, man. So retention, people see this stuff on the news. And if I'm a young kid, if I'm 20 something years old and I'm thinking about a career in law enforcement, I might second guess it now because shit, it appears that nobody has the police officers back.
Yeah, absolutely right. And, you know, just to go through this categorically, what you just mentioned in terms of disarming police, I will tell you this. I am all for cops being disarmed if every perp and bad guy on the face of this earth turns in their guns and says, okay, we're going to start from scratch. If you can do that, then okay, then we'll go ahead and disarm.
Well, you know the criminals. They fucking follow the rules, brother.
Until we do that, we need armed cops. Who is going to stop the armed gangbanger that's doing gunpoint robberies in the socioeconomically impoverished neighborhoods in a place like New York City if we have unarmed cops? Who's going to do it? We're going to have the good human man jump out of the ice cream truck? No, it doesn't work that way. And then when we look at the rhetoric that's just being levied against these officers, it's really... you really have to look hard and far for someone that's supporting these officers that are just going out there to do their jobs. The average cop becomes a member of a police department because they want to help society. And so when we look at the rhetoric that's being levied against cops, as you mentioned a second ago, it's really minimizing or substantially decreasing the number of people that are ready to become cops. Yeah. And this is going to be a real problem in the next 5 to 10 years because we need good people that are going to step up and defend the citizens of our society. And what I fear, and God, please tell me this is not going to happen, but I can see as a result of the attrition and these positions not being filled, law enforcement agencies somehow regressing on the requirements to become a cop, and yeah. that is going to kill us.
Yeah, I've seen that a little bit in my neck of the wood, and brother. And my point of view is, I would rather be short on the street than to have somebody who doesn't go through the, you know, he gets in there because of laxed requirements. We don't need people. Go ahead.
We don't need Bloods and Crips and drug dealers in the locker room getting changed with us as we're suiting up to go out on patrol.
Well, they're getting intelligence is what they're doing, and then they're giving it back to their crew.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, and it's just like I just look at the direction that things are going in, and it's a real challenge. I'm just hoping that a lot of departments, and I see more of this happening, more departments are looking to invest in technological innovations, such as drones, things to that effect. And that in many ways can assist in the personnel shortages. But I'm the last person that would tell you that I'm all for a camera as opposed to that warm body in that radio car. But at the same token, something has to be done. But we still need to stay abreast of these technological innovations. Because let me tell you, these bad guys are becoming overly crafty with computers. And we need to stay two steps ahead. Because if we don't stay two steps ahead, we're gonna fall 10 steps behind.
Yeah.
And that impacts on not just you and I, but the elderly people in your family, children, etc. Something needs to be done, and it needs to be done now.
Yeah. And I agree with you with the technology. Look, I'm all for technology. I think it's great. But in my opinion, you said it, nothing is ever going to take the place of that human interaction. It's never going to, especially in law enforcement. It's never going to happen. I agree. Technology is great, but we need, you know, people to do the job face to face with people. So, yeah, let's shift gear. Now, you do a lot of talking about, you have expertise in Homeland Security, talking about all different aspects of counterterrorism. Now, what do you think? Let me ask you, Darren. I mean, switching gears from law enforcement in the bigger picture, what do you believe some of the biggest challenges facing the country from a Homeland Security perspective are?
One of the biggest challenges from a Homeland Security perspective, in my mind, are the locally elected officials, such as mayors, that fail to cooperate and collaborate with federal law enforcement agencies such as ICE. When we go back to the Patriot Act that was signed off by George W. Bush, it was designed to protect the homeland after 9/11 happened. It was like, mm-hmm. we didn't really have a homeland security, so to speak, to defend us. We just kind of had the military and the CIA that did their thing abroad. But here domestically, we primarily relied on localized police departments and federal law enforcement. As a result of the fractured relationships between locally elected officials such as Mayor de Blasio and the federal government such as Donald Trump, we now have a situation where common citizens are suffering. And I give you a quick example. Here we have a global, in all cities, we have this thing we refer to as a global travel pass, which allows you, which allows the federal government to access DMV information. And if that information, if the federal government can access your information, your driver's license information, then you can, and you're seen as a sound person that's not a security risk, mm-hmm. then you can do the fast track through the airports. Since the state of New York is unwilling to cooperate with ICE, President Trump recently revoked that privilege for New Yorkers. So what's happening now is the common citizen is being hurt based on the fuckery that's being practiced by people like Mayor de Blasio and Governor Cuomo in New York, because they're unwilling to allow the federal government to access the DMV records. And this is essential information for the federal government to determine and assess who is not a security risk. And they're also looking to allow people to move much smoother through the airports. But it goes back to what I feel the number one, the number one thing that I'm worried about is the local law enforcement officers that don't understand a goddamn thing about law enforcement. But at the same token, they're moving forward with policy that's ultimately hurting us as citizens. Lone wolf attacks have been something that's been prevalent in our society for a period of time. And fortunately, they've been more of an aberration than the norm. I think we've done a phenomenal job in detecting a lot of these attacks, these terrorist attacks that are driven towards high populous areas in places like New York, Washington, D.C., etc. But once again, we need to have that collaboration. Mm-hmm. Without the collaborative approach between local law enforcement and federal law enforcement, we have fractured communications, and that will allow someone to slip through the cracks. We have so many terrorist plots that are thwarted that we just don't hear about.
Yeah.
We just
Every
don't
day.
Hear about. We
Every
hear
day.
About, right. We hear about the ones that are either carried out and we have a casualty, or the ones that there was an attempt to carry them out, but we don't hear about the ones that have been thwarted. But we need that collaboration. We do.
I just cannot believe that we've come to a point in our nation's history where we have local politicians that are not cooperating with the feds, because the feds, God forbid, and the administration want to protect American citizens. It's just unbelievable to me. But I read an article today where a federal appeals court said the administration can withhold funds from sanctuary cities, not willing to give up information so our brave men and women can do their jobs and get some of these shitheads that don't belong here out of the country.
You know, and I agree with that, because it's like you're saying – okay, we're not the localized governments are saying, look, we're not going to help you. But at the same token, they're coming to Washington on their hands and knees begging for funding. I don't want to say it's a quid pro quo, but I also understand that, hey, the feds are saying, look, if you're not going to help us, why should we help you? But who's caught in the crossfire of the common citizens? And that's where I have a problem. And I blame the locally elected officials, as you just mentioned.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think? I mean, where do you think you live in New York, Darren? I mean, what is de Blasio and all these other morons? I mean, they keep getting reelected. What's going on?
Well, fortunately, based on term limits, de Blasio is at the end of his rope and he's out there representing.
He'll be a senator now.
No, I don't know. That'll be tough. He's representing, I should say, he's backing Bernie Sanders.
Oh, shocker.
And his socialist. Yeah, he's backing Bernie Sanders and his socialist agenda. I don't know if you heard what Bernie said recently, that he runs consistent with Fidel Castro's policies.
Yeah.
And so, but de Blasio, he's consistent. So, and you know, I'm going to tell you, I really can't blame de Blasio because we knew that he was incompetent prior to taking his position. So he's just doing what I expected him to do. So I think with term limits with him, it's a good thing. Term limits with a lot of these people, it's a great thing. But we don't have him in the Senate. We need to get him in the Senate. We need to get him in the House. And I just think that it's just really fracturing the robust network that we had that was erected back in right after 2001, when the Patriot Act was enacted. We had some phenomenal things that were done for law enforcement, but all of that stuff is just being eroded. We look at the militarization of police. This is an essential tool for local law enforcement. But believe it or not, a lot of these localities, these local law enforcement agencies, are being held back by these locally elected officials and not getting the proper logistics that they need, such as armor-piercing vehicles and things to that effect.
Yeah, because it looks too military. We can't do that.
Yeah, you know, but this is all done in the protections of the citizenry that they're there to represent.
Now, you still keep in contact with a lot of your brothers and sisters on the job, brother, or what?
Every day.
I know they can't speak for everybody, but what's the morale? I mean, what's the sense that you're getting from people still on the job? Are they optimistic? Are they pissed? I mean, what is it?
You know, there's three words that I hear from people, and I hate to say this, but those three words are, this job sucks.
Yeah.
And it's progressively getting worse. But you know, it's funny because I became a cop, man. When I first became a cop in 1991, and this was at the height of the crack epidemic in New York. So the crack wars were spiraling out of control. And I will never forget the first day I became a cop. People told a lot of the old timers said the same thing. This job sucks, but you can have some fun with it. As crazy as it may sound, because of the violent nature of policing back then during the crack wars, it was like time flew and you were actually okay with coming to work. It was like, okay, look, I'm doing some good things, but you just have this progressive, I should say regressive notion that's coming from a lot of these political leaders that are causing a lot of the good guys in the police departments to leave and go the Fed route to either the FBI, DEA, ATF, and just quote unquote, just leave the places that they live in. Yeah. And I can't blame them, but the sentiment, or I should say the morale, is at an all time low, and it sinks every day.
Yeah. And I talk about
one thing I will say about President Trump, you call him what you want, but he's the biggest cheerleader for law enforcement that I've ever seen.
I agree.
And I mean, I've been on, when I first became a cop, Bill Clinton was the president, so it just goes to let you know what it was, you know, to now.
Yeah, he's been a huge cheerleader for law enforcement. Any president should be that. But I do believe, and I talk about this a lot on my show, Darren, and maybe I'm just naive, but I think the majority of Americans out there support are brave men and women who protect our communities every day. I wish they were more vocal about it, though.
Yeah, well, the problem with that is you have your hands tied, because if you make statements as a uniformed officer on behalf of the membership, with the exception of a union leader, you know, they can hold you for a conduct unbecoming, which sucks, and I don't think that that's right, but that's just one of the strangleholds that politicians have on our sworn officers. But, you know, just on that note, we have the president of the Sergeants Benevolent Association in the NYPD, Edward Mullins, is now recently battling an internal affairs allegation coming from Mayor de Blasio, because Ed Mullins stepped up and said what Mayor de Blasio is doing is wrong, is dangerous for the officers, and we need to make some changes. So as a result of that, Mayor de Blasio sicks the Internal Affairs Bureau on the Sergeant's Benevolent President, Ed Mullins. Come on, is that crazy or what? I mean, if that's not a conflict of interest, I don't know what is.
Well, it's ridiculous, because Blasio doesn't have shit for experience, and you got this sergeant on the force who knows what the hell's going on.
Yeah, but de Blasio's consistent. I give him that.
Consistent.
I give him that much.
Well, brother, I thank you for taking the time to come on the show. Where can people find you, Darren? I mean, you're all over the place on the news. Where can they find you?
If you go, the easiest way to get to me is you go to Dr. Darren Porcher on Twitter. I list interviews and, you know, I give my 2 cents on what's going on and how I feel about it. And it's quite current, because I'm always on Twitter and I'm always speaking to things that are happening from a law enforcement perspective and a societal perspective. You know, real issues that are happening in policing, I address those things. I introduce video, etc. So the best place for you to reach out to me would be on Twitter at Dr. Darren Porcher on Twitter.
Dr. Darren Porcher, an honor, brother, having you on. I want you back on again, man. If you'd love to come back, I would love.
I'd love to. Hopefully, if you let me on, I'll be.
I'd love. Well, you are. You got so much knowledge, brother. Thank you for your service to this great country and the military. Thank you for your service serving with the NYPD. It's an honor, brother. Love to have you back on in the future. You take care.
And you take care. And thank you for your service to both policing and the military as well.
Thank you, brother. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.